What? Buy a t-shirt. Buy a t-shirt. Buy a coffee mug. That's what Leanne's yelling in the background right now. I love that shirt, Georgia.
T-shirt, coffee mug.
T-shirt, coffee mug.
Life of the party.
Life of the party. I'm sorry. I apologize if I...
T-shirt, tea mug.
Okay, everyone stop it. I apologize if I sound a little rough.
You are a little rough.
Just got back from Stanhope's house. That podcast should be coming out soon. Uh-oh. It is a six-hour podcast. So if you need to drive from Tampa to Key West, next week will be a good time. All right. Tour dates, March 17th. I am at the Columbus Funny Bone for my Call in Sick to Work show. 18th, 19th, Long Road Distillery. Wise Guys in Utah, the weekend before my special. It's the 24th, 25th, I think. Just added. And then I'm shooting my Showtime special April 1st at the Irvine Improv. Go get tickets. Go to BurtBurtBurt.com to get everything. Is that it, George?
Yeah.
All right. Today's guest needs no introduction. He came out to the Bell... Although I'll give him one, apparently. He came out to the Bellevue Parlor Live, and we hung out. We had a great conversation before the show. We podcasted, and then... What are you doing?
I'm looking at you.
And then he came up on stage with me after and took his shirt off. Ladies and gentlemen, Danny Bonaducci. Save it, save it, yes.
But just so you know in advance, it starts to be going, whoop, punch that fucker right in the face.
Oh, good, good. Hey, guys, let's not leave.
Was that yours, Bruce, that coffee?
Yeah, I just poured one, I think.
Cool. Can I grab you guys anything?
In the other room, yeah.
Can I grab you guys anything?
I'm good, I'm good. Yeah, this is pretty low maintenance. Danny, this is yours.
Do we do this handheld?
Yeah, I do it handheld. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's cool, fine.
Pretty pretty low.
My station, Amy runs my whole goddamn life. But my station is after me, right? Or not my station, CBS is after me like crazy to podcast. And I got to tell you, first of all, it seems rough for part of my day they want.
Yeah.
They pay me real money. Like, I'm comfortable.
Yeah, we're recording, by the way. Okay.
I'm comfortable with what they pay me.
Yeah.
And then they said, well, the podcast, because it's kind of an experiment, I don't think they use that word, we'll give you $200 a podcast. You can't even buy a decent
podcast. You can make so much more money on a podcast.
Well, that's the promise. Yeah. That's the promise. Yeah. We'll make hundreds of thousands of dollars down the line. But
yeah. You could make a ton.
My old partner, Adam Carolla, they tell me, generates $7 million a year.
He makes a lot of money. He makes a lot of money. I think he's the guy that kind of set the business plan, and I think you probably know the guy that set it up. I think his name's Norman. Worked at Courtside Media, or
I believe I know him.
Big Lakers fan, guy. He's like brought in Steve Austin, and then brought in Adam. And
but it's weird that Adam cannot maintain. I don't think, maybe chooses not to, and the hours are terrible.
Yeah.
But he can't maintain a real live radio gig, and then everybody who gets into podcasting kind of wants that. And what he's been able to pull off podcasting is just absolutely amazing.
It is pretty interesting that most people kind of – you see some shows that just steal from the morning show format,
right,
and do a show like that. And it's funny because it's all the things that we mocked. Like we'd go in and do radio and be like, ugh. Look at this. And yeah, and then all of a sudden you get it and you start doing it because you're like, I don't know what the fuck to do.
A guy named a legend, and an actual real one, not nationwide, but in his own right. You know Scott Shannon?
Do I know fucking Scott Shannon?
Okay.
Hell yeah, I grew up in Tampa.
Okay, so Scott Shannon.
Q105.
A legend. A $5 million a year player in one single market.
Yeah.
Pretty impressive. I'm talking to him one time, and, you know, I'm paying my due respects. I'm a little bit nervous about meeting the Scott Shannon.
And I told him I'd do a bit kind of like that bit, hoping he wouldn't yell at me. He goes, listen to me, boy. Steal from me, you're stealing twice. He goes, everything I do, I stole from somebody else. I feel very good about that.
That's great. Yeah, I go, I'm obsessed right now with, I want to release another podcast. One called First Beer with Bert. But I want to steal from that old format on Fridays. Do you remember I don't know if you were doing radio then, only because I know that you did it. You started doing it in like the early 90s, right?
My first paid gig was in 88.
Okay. But like in the early 80s, there was this real hacky zoo format that Scott Shannon created.
The Morning Zoo. Yeah. He was the king of it.
And there was this Friday air check that they do that. As a matter of fact, John Heffron sent to me the other day.
Oh, really?
Yep. Because I was like, I'm looking for something to watch on the internet, and he sent old air checks, and it's this guy from San Diego, and it's that they get the Loverboy song, Everybody's Working, but it's the Quitting Bell, and you hear Friday.
Right. Oh, yeah. John Heffron, by the way, we were doing, I think it was Gene Simmons, his roast. We're doing his roast. And I just met Amy, and she's ill-prepared. My wife is at that time. First of all, she's not my wife. When I first met Amy, she was 25 and I was 50. A thing that will never happen again. I will never live to be twice her age. We'll have to be 600 for me to be twice her age. It was embarrassing. I didn't want to be twice anybody's goddamn age as a cliche, but what are you going to do? She's the one. Anyway, so she's not prepared for any of my life. The noise, she's not prepared for Gene Simmons being a weirdo and John Heffron saying shit to her. You know, I go, what the fuck? What are you? What kind of boyfriend are you?
Yeah.
And so John Heffron is up on stage riffing on Gene Simmons.
Yeah.
And he goes, and look at all the notables that came out. There's Danny Bonaducci and Danny Bonaducci's new girlfriend, or the least informed woman in the world, as I like to call her. And she goes, well, is this how life's going to be now? And yeah. That's it. Welcome aboard.
John Heffron credits you for teaching him how to box.
Yeah, it's one of my, I've been given some really good compliments in my day, but this one was really great. We were doing some boxing, and John's okay.
Yes.
It's just he hasn't had the shit kicked out of him 100 times like I have. I'm not a good boxer. As a matter of fact, I was fighting some guy. I don't know who it was, but I knocked him out, and he didn't get up. It was a big thing. And Amy said, boy, you're a great boxer. And I said, no, I'm really not. I just hit way harder. And I goes, no, you're a good boxer. You just knocked that guy. And I go, if the bell rang, he got up and I shot him in the face. Am I a good boxer? She goes, well, I guess not. And I go, that's what I do.
Exactly.
I didn't even know what it meant.
When?
You know what, anyway, let me tell you the John Heffron thing real quick.
Oh, yeah, please.
So John, I forgot it. Wasn't you. It was me. So John wants to box with him. Tell him I'm not that good at it. There are guys good enough to play around. I'm not, I could. I can try, but I might hit you in the head.
Yeah.
And he goes, oh, no. And he's hitting me a lot. He's very good. He's very fast, and he's hitting me a lot. And finally, I just went, boom. And down he goes. And out goes, I'm going, shit. Because I have to work with this guy in the morning. Not only might he be mad, but he might be injured. It was a decent shot. And so everybody gets up and goes about he's okay, and he gets about their business. So I hear later on that he ends up going to the emergency hospital. He can't remember where he lives.
Really?
He can't remember the car. It's quite the compliment, really. Like, you can't remember where you... I've hit a lot of people, and most of them know where they live afterwards.
Memory out of you?
Yes. Well, it gets better. He goes, I woke up the next day, and my girlfriend is yelling. I got a new stereo, and I got a new flat-screen TV. And she goes, what happened? She goes, I don't remember doing any of this. All I know is Danny Bonaducci hit me, and then I woke up. She goes, he hit you so hard you bought electronics? And he said, well, apparently so. So it's a very nice story at the expense of John Heffron, but I really appreciate it.
I'll knock you into debt.
Exactly.
Oh, that's great. Now, when did you – because it's so funny. When I think of you, I think of a guy who's had a rough and tumble life.
Yeah,
I don't think of a guy whose dad was in television and who was. I don't think of a Hollywood kid. I think of someone who grew up in the streets. But you grew up in Hollywood.
It's very astute to say that because I'm closer to a Bowery boy than a kid of privilege.
Yeah.
Although dad wasn't that successful, he just happened to be brilliant. We didn't make a lot of money. We were always going, shit, who's turning out the lights?
Yeah.
But he was a genius comedy writer, which is weird. I never heard the man laugh. But it's funny. One of the last things, so I didn't speak to him for the last 30 years of his life or whatever it was. But give you an idea of my poor father, because he's a very serious man.
Yeah.
And he'd always scream, And he meant business. He'd scream with his teeth gritted like this, and he'd say, "I was born in the wrong goddamn century." And like, I don't know exactly what that means, but I can tell that you mean it. And he'd get out of his way. So he would write in his bathroom, and on old manual typewriter, which wasn't interesting then, everybody wrote on a manual typewriter back in, you know, 1984.
Oh, that's so crazy. I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Everybody. Nobody had, like, what do you mean? Electric typewriter computers. So you'd hear, so you know, I'm safe. That man's in there typing. Nobody's going to get killed. It was when the shit. He's on the loose. So one day he's in there and he's writing one day at a time. And he wrote a lot of those and he wrote a lot of everything. He wrote one day at a time and the Jeffersons and good times. And he's writing good times. And all of a sudden you hear, you listen real close to me. You go, dynamite. I write dynamite for a fucking living. And the door bursts open and everybody fucking hides. He goes, oh my God, he just figured out he writes shit.
dynamite for a living?
And that's the last thing I remember him writing. But he was very good. He was just a spooky guy. But you're right. I voluntarily found myself not only on the street, but on bad streets, dangerous streets. Yeah. I'm positive. I liked it. There's a, you know, there's something to be said for danger lurking around the corner that makes the walk from here to there more interesting. I think it's probably not that deep.
No. I connect with you on, like, you know, you see things in television and you go, oh, I got a little bit of that in me. There was I don't know if this was scripted or not, but in Breaking Bonaducci, there was a night where you skateboarded down to a liquor shop, got a bottle of vodka, sat on your skateboard and drank vodka.
You know what? I will tell you this, because everybody thinks you couldn't drink the bottle looks bigger than it is. It's a pint. A pint of Absolut is shaped exactly like the other bottle of Absolut. So it's a fifth in everybody's imagination. It's a small bottle. Yeah. If you meant business, you could drink it in one sip like I did. There was nothing that special about it. But no, it wasn't scripted. I was mad about something. The bigger thing, and a lot of people noticed it, but the bigger thing was going through that intersection on a skateboard against the light with cars going each way. That was a lot tougher.
Man, I don't know how they covered that.
You know what's interesting about that to me? As crazy as I was, I was fully cognizant that this could suck. I'm rolling the dice. I'm getting this because I want them to film the guy that doesn't have a care in the world about dying.
Yeah.
When in fact I did. I'm just still going to do it.
Yeah.
So yeah, the drinking with the vodka came kind of secondary. And I'll tell you, that guy, the guy at the liquor store, I was off and on trying to quit drinking.
Yeah.
So if I'd come in and I'd give him the right look, he'd hide a bottle of vodka in some kind of weird container so nobody would see it.
Oh, nice.
He's a good man. So that was a weird corner for me.
Now, what's sobriety been like for you?
Because
I always feel like I've always been – I've always someone who said I will never quit drinking. I will never quit drinking because I always want to be able to have a drink. I may stop for periods of time, but I'll never be the guy that like there was a TV writer, a friend of mine who I won't out. But we were at a party and I said, "You getting a drink?" And he goes, "No." And I said, "Oh, that's odd. You stop." And he's like, "Yeah, don't tell anybody."
I was like, "Well, no, it's shameful at first. You don't want it because it's so much your character.
Yeah.
You know, it's so much." Bonaducci drinks and then he says stupid shit and then things can get unpleasant. You know, that's part of my. I was really embarrassed by sobriety. And it took me 20 years to get any time. They give out chips at AA. They give you a 3-month chip, a 6-month chip, a year. I could never get the 3-month chip ever. I couldn't do it. And it was, you know, at first, just I didn't want to do it. But here's the thing, Bert, you shouldn't do it. You can drink. Don't fucking quit. Why would you ever quit?
Right.
You were the party guy at whatever the university. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And you can still do it today.
Yeah.
You don't have a problem at all. You have a hobby. And God bless you and keep doing it. My wife, because of me and what has happened with me, Amy drinks 2 drinks a day, sometimes 3 every now and again on the weekend. And then twice a month, she questions me, shut up.
Yeah.
Drink your drinks and have some fun. You're 33 years old.
Yeah.
Everything's gravy when you're your age.
It's so funny. I remember my wife saying to me, "Honey, you don't have a drinking problem. Because when you want to stop drinking, you just stop drinking."
Right.
And she's like, "You know, I just wish that when you're on the road, you were more healthy. Like you'd just work out more."
Right.
And not spend the end of the night arguing about politics with the other comics.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, that's the crazy thing. So you partied really hard in the late 80s.
No, you know what? It's all the stuff. If you look at a list, I have a list because people call into my show. I do a thing on my show every day at 7:30 called Life Coach. And just to make things easy. I downloaded the 20 signs that you're an alcoholic. And the gag is that if you answer yes to any three of them, you're an alcoholic.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I answer all of them. Have you ever been arrested? Yeah. You ever been in a fight? Yeah.
But you don't
ever break up with anybody? Yeah. Ever been naked? Yeah. So it's like, no, I don't get to. My card has been pulled, and it's the right thing to do. I miss it. I want it. I wish I could drink with you guys tonight. I wish we could all sit down and have a drink. And we could.
Yeah.
I mean, no problem for three nights or four nights from now, a month from now. Now I'm in jail again, going, fuck that Bert. Yeah. How the hell did this happen? I had a drink with Bert, now I'm in jail again, God damn it. So I don't get to.
Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah, I had a buddy who used to love cocaine. He just loved it. And then he just quit. And man, he started doing so much shit in his life. I was like, holy crap. It's probably the same stuff as your dad said. I would have been something in a different century.
Right.
If this guy had been alive without cocaine, he might have been fucking...
Conversely, though... I used to love to go fishing from high school. My friends and I would go out before high school and fish and bring in, you know, trout and shit to school. And then I was so coming up on 50 years old, and this is my life, the whole night. I got to find a time to fish. You know, if I'm playing this comedy club, is there a fishing hole nearby? It's what I do. It's who I am. And then I quit drinking, and I dropped a line in the water, and I gave it about 9. I went, this is bullshit.
There's so many activities.
Who fooled me that I liked this for the last 40 goddamn years?
Oh, going to a club sober is fucking exhausting.
Exhausting.
It's exhausting, and you realize just how precarious everything is, that there could be a fight at any fucking second. What am I doing here?
Well, plus, if we're going back to my drinking days, if you're in a club with me...
Yeah.
Now the chances have gone way up that there could be a fight anymore. You know what it is? Here's what happens. And this is a time ago, but I got three like wonderful ingredients for something stupid happening, and that is I'm drunk, I'm short, and I'm mad about it. And, you know, somebody 6'2" is going to say anything to me, including hello, and it's going to go bad from there.
That should be a T-shirt.
Amy and I, I'll write that down.
I'm short, and I'm mad about it.
Amy and I, we're so early on, right? Early on, because I'm like a way, not like I'm a better guy, and I found God, but you know, you shouldn't tolerate that behavior. That behavior is wrong. But Amy and I are early on, and a guy has the audacity to just be in the same room with me and approximately 6'5". And I just marched across the room. I went, fuck you. And then I stood there, like, you must do something. I'm a little guy. You need to hit me now, and I'll beat you up. And he goes, what's the matter with you, little man? And I just hit him in the head. And that was kind of it. But I've calmed down. You could be in a club with me. Well, you are in a club with me now, and nobody's getting hit in the head.
I don't see you short. But it's so funny.
I'm drunk and I'm short and I'm mad about it. That was for you, buddy. I never said that before.
That should be a T-shirt. That is a great line. You're easily the most entertaining person to Google.
Oh, is that true?
Oh, no questions asked. No questions asked. I said, probably when I did my interview with Heffron, we got done. And I said, I didn't know you did radio with Danny. And he went, yeah.
And he was good.
And he was like, yeah, I learned a lot. He goes, that was one of the greatest times of my life. And I'm sitting there, I Googled you, and I mean, some of the most, just dudes getting slapped, dudes getting thrown, your digital footprint is fun as fuck.
Until recently, and I'd been sober at least 4 years when I changed my mind about this, I used to wear a human tooth around my neck until last year, because I knocked it out of this fucker's mouth and he had it coming, and you probably saw it. Johnny Fairplay.
Yeah.
By the way, he lost all his goddamn teeth.
I know Johnny Fairplay through Twitter. He just texted me one night and he's like, hey, big fan of your podcast. So he's listening to this.
Oh, cool. Well, I'll tell you, Johnny, and I don't know if he's still mad at me because he really got hurt. But if you watch
he really got hurt.
Oh, hurt bad.
I watched that live.
Mm.
I think because I was working at Fox at the time. I want to say I was working at Fox, and I saw that happen, and I know the feeling of when you're funny,
right.
You get hurt, and what you do, and he did the thing of when you're funny, but you're hurt, and he he just got up and kind of scrambled.
I didn't mean, if you watch it again, because if somebody tells you that story anecdotally, I killed the guy. If you watch it, I don't do anything really to him.
Yeah.
Here's how the whole thing happened. I'm walking out with Amy again early on in our relationship.
Yes.
And she's thinking, so this is what you come with. Janice Dickinson's part of your life, really? So we're walking out, and as I'm walking out, he's got his microphone, much like we have our microphones right here. And he walks out, and they're booing him. You know, and rightly so. He's a dick. Or he was a dick. I'm sure he's changed a fine young man.
I ran into him a couple times during that time period, too. And he was unfiltered dick. I mean, I think I watched him talk shit to Chuck Liddell.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, I remember we were at a party and I was like, Chuck Liddell is a sidebar funny story.
Just real quick, I want to check something. Amy, did you ever see Chuck Liddell punch me in the face?
Yeah.
There you go.
What?
So,
are you serious?
I've been around, man. You know why? Because I told him you can't knock me off my feet, and I was right.
Shut up. That is a fucking...
Okay, now, like, at this point now, I just say, Mr. Liddell, I'm so sorry. I was ill-mannered, and I'm thank you for not killing me. But, yeah, that was a
thing. Oh, my God.
I asked a lot of people. What was that guy, that giant dude, Tito Ortiz,
yeah.
Told him the same thing. You can't knock me off my feet, and I was ready to get. You know why? Because I'm drunk, I'm angry, and I'm mad about it. Or some such thing. I forgot short.
I'm drunk, I'm short,
short I'm mad about it.
So, but yeah, so we keep going about Johnny Fairplay.
So they're all yelling, they're booing him. And he goes, why are you booing me? And I just walked up on stage, took the microphone. I didn't mean to take the microphone. I meant to pull it to my mouth, and he let go of it. And I said, they're booing because they hate you. Yeah. And I just dropped the microphone, and I went to leave. And he yells, Bonaducci. And I turn, and he's totally across the stage, and he has the microphone again. And I think, he's going to hit me in the face with that mic. And he's running at me. And I think, fuck it, I can take it. You know, if I punch him in the face, I'm the jerk. Yeah. So I just go, okay. And he just jumps on me. Puts his arms around my neck, his legs around my waist, and starts doing something he calls the monkey hump. His hips like this on me, and I just went, get off me. And I was, by the way, I was on a ton of steroids at that point in my life. And he's pulling at my neck and gyrating his hips, so he pulls at the same time I heave. And he just goes, fine, but it's nothing. It looks like nothing.
It was so weirdly symbiotic.
Everybody thought I'm super strong, crazy, but he helped. I just, like, barely. Yeah. But I mean, he didn't protect himself. I don't know if he was drunk or what he was, but he landed right on his mouth. Yeah. All his teeth came out.
Oh, my God.
So he sued me for $10 million, which was kind of a drag. He didn't get it. But, you know, that thing he did on Survivor, I didn't hate him so much for who he is or what he does. I hated him because he was hateable. He went out of his. He wanted to be a villain, and he didn't have the build for it. He wanted to be a villain. He did some wrestling later. He did some other villainous things. And I hope, if Fairplay is listening, I hope he's a nicer guy now, because he's got to be in his mid-40s, late-40s or something by now.
What's so crazy?
You don't want to be a jerk your whole life.
What's so crazy is he was at the front end of playing the reality game as a show. As a show, as a game, right. When I think America still was like, no.
Oh, right.
You know, and I think
what
now
if
he did that today, they'd be like, well played. You know, it's just, you know.
I'd have been well played. I didn't see him. I didn't know he did that till afterwards, and I researched who he was. I didn't know he did that.
Yeah. Yeah. But I watched that one online. That's a great one.
Yeah. I've been around. So speaking of online, you'll dig this. I'm 56. I don't think to go to the internet. The internet is an afterthought to me. My wife is 33 and was a school teacher when I met her. The internet, she thinks immediately. So, Bert would like to podcast you. Do you want to do it? Yeah, I know exactly who he is. That'd be fun. She Googles you. The movie Van Morrison is based on you.
Van Wilder.
Van Wilder, not Van Morrison. That's silly.
Although I'll take that one before Van Wilder.
is based on you.
Yeah.
So here's what happens in my household. She goes, dancing around this, because I used to be such a dick. I'm a better guy now. And she goes, I was in Van Wilder.
Really?
I said, what? She goes, yeah, I was at a pool party. And every piece of information is coming at like a spoonful at a time to see when I'm going to get upset by something.
Yeah.
And so it ends up with, I'm by the pool in Van Wilder. The fuck are you doing by the pool in Van Wilder? I'm playing a tiki girl in a tiki dress. You're playing a tiki girl in a tiki dress with this fucking Ryan Reynolds. What the fuck are you doing? I'm going to punch Bert right in the face. And that was about an hour ago.
Good. Well, if it gives you any consolation, I had nothing to do with the movie.
That's what she said.
It's one of those good little folklore stories in your life.
No, it's a great story, man. I admire you so much because... And, you know, I don't know if somebody, how they would feel about me saying this out loud. They go, really? Don't you want to keep that a secret? But everything I do that's a bonus round comes from being on the Partridge Family. I'm the guy from the – dude, I'm in the radio because they interviewed the guy from the Partridge Family who was so funny. They said, why don't we fire that guy and hire that guy? So I get to stay. Then I was in movies. And then, everything I did, you know, they say, well, you know, you're your own man. Yeah, but I did something first that opened the doors, and it's always going to be Danny Partridge. And the fact that you're, you know, it's 2016 and you're still headlining this club, and I've seen a Trip Flip and I've seen Bert the Conqueror. I know exactly who you are. So God bless you for keeping that alive.
I wanted to say – I was having lunch today, and I was thinking about, like, I always find
parallels. Like, I could always find parallels in songs where I was like, oh, that's like my life.
Right.
But one of the cool things about you that I think that a lot of us in the business that have been in it as long as we have look at is your staying power.
Right.
Like, you've not, you, I don't think anyone could really wrap their head around just how hard it would be to be a child star, to be working consecutive in radio for like, what, 40 years, 30 years?
No, 25 though.
25 years. 25 years consistently and doing reality shows and wrestling. I mean, you've done literally everything and I go, that's what life's about. That's what this business is about.
It really is.
It's just making a living.
The wrestling thing, because it's like not my cup of tea. I didn't know anything. Not only did I not know wrestling or the moves, but I, you know, my radio show is a real thing. I was doing mornings in Los Angeles. I can't play around with Hulk Hogan until after my show. I'll do your show, Mr. Hogan, but I got to come there at 11 because these guys were getting there at 7, 6 in the morning to learn these moves. So we go to do it. And like I said, I was on a ton of roids, and I'm crazy.
What kind of steroids?
The good ones, testosterone, Winstrol. Winstrol, by the way, which I have not an ounce of body fat on my own. And on the bottle of Winstrol, there's a picture of a horse, which will give you an indication. It's a fat burner. And an asthma drug for racehorses. And on the top of my testosterone is a picture of a German Shepherd. I even said to a real doctor one time, because I was worried about shooting stuff into my body, I said, is this okay? He goes, yeah, it's almost the same biology. Okay, thanks, man. I appreciate that. It's a real doctor. My real doctor said it's okay. So anyway, I'm crazy looking, and we get to pick out our own characters. And I'm kind of a weirdo anyway at this point. I like to dress up and fool around. I have this thing called the London Opera Coat, and it's got collars that go up like over here. It looks more vampire-y than opera. I don't know whether. Then it's big brass buttons all the way down, and then goes down to the floor and actually hits the floor and kind of drags behind you like a cape. It was crazy. Yeah. Then no shirt and, by the way, dark sunglasses. So that's my character. That's who I'm going to be. So it's the very first day of filming. I wrestle a bunch of people, and we wrestle. And it's all mapped out. Nobody's getting hurt. There's no, like, who's the toughest guy. But you can take bumps and things like that. And then we all go back to our dressing room where Hulk Hogan and Dennis Rodman or whoever are going to pick who won that round. And I come out, and they're talking. I'm in my cape, right? And my muscles are, like, freaking out and bouncing and stuff. And all of a sudden, this drop of blood just comes out from under my glasses and starts running down my cheek. And they talk, and Danny Bonaducci is the winner. And all great. And then they send me off to the doctor. Hulk Hogan comes up to me later on in that day and goes, hey, Bonaducci, that cut above your eye, did you do that? And I said, yeah. And he said, how? I said, a nail I found in the dressing room after the match. He goes, you missed your calling. I thought I was going to win after that. I thought, okay, because I'm in better shape and wouldn't take more bumps. But it was predisposed that Rodman would win, who was an asshole, by the way.
Yeah, I've heard you and him get on it.
Yeah. That's how I got into the wrestling thing. I was dogging him on the air. I was talking on my radio show saying that Carmen Electra is probably the prettiest girl I would never have sex with because she had sex with Dennis Rodman. Who would ever follow that? All of a sudden, Rodman's on the phone.
It was so odd that he was like, but it was, they're like, is it really Rodman? And then it was like,
I didn't think
like,
it was Rodman.
And then
the
they're
second
like,
he's on, you absolutely know it's Rodman.
Yeah.
So I'm talking to Rodman. And the first thing he says to me is that he's going to come down there and beat the white off me. And which I thought was very funny, okay. Yeah. And I'm thinking, this is the best thing ever for my career. My career's smoking as it is. I'm on fire.
Yeah.
I get my ass kicked by Dennis Rodman in a parking lot on the air. I'm a god.
Yeah.
And so I gave him the coordinates. I said where I'd be, where I'd meet him.
I drop a pin. I just grab it. Email it over.
And he never showed. And it made not that great of a show after that because it was all waiting for Rodman. I was all just waiting for him the whole time.
Yeah.
But the next thing I know, he's challenging me to a fight. And it's in the ring, and I'm going, okay. And the next thing I know, I've entered a talent contest, if you will. So this wrestling show, and I'm part of it, and there's no way to get out. Although it was really fun. I wouldn't take it back. It was really fun.
Yeah, well, I talked to Adam Carolla about this as well. And one of the things that I think, and I don't know if maybe I look too deeply into this, but like I always want to talk about the times when you weren't working or the times you're afraid you couldn't pay bills. Because that's one of the things that I think drives all of us to just look, it's almost a flaw for me. I feel like I'm working myself into a grave. Like, I cannot stop working.
You can't, but you can't. You're right. Like, what would happen to you if somebody take your place immediately?
Exactly.
We're not surgeons, man. Somebody else will say something clever. Some other guy will walk in the room and say, I'm drunk, I'm short, and I'm mad about it. And you'll go, I like that guy better.
Yeah.
We can't stop. We can't stop.
There was a period, I think, and I don't know where I might have read this, but that you had, like almost, like, 22 months where you worked like only like six times.
No, it's in my book. I figured it out.
That was it, yeah.
That in 14 years, I worked 27 weeks or something like that. I did two episodes, maybe three episodes of Chips, an after-school special, and something else. But it came out to 25, 27 weeks in 14 years.
Now, do you ever identify with like guys like, and I know this is not, there's no real parallel, but do you ever look at a guy like, say, Screech, Dustin Diamond, and go, hey, man, you can, you don't have to do porn. You don't have to do this. There's a way out of this. Like,
yeah, and no, I know Dustin. I don't care for him.
I don't think anyone does.
No, but nobody likes him. Although the first thing he did that I ever liked was stabbing some guy at a bar. That's actually stepping up for the plate. I never stabbed a guy. I've considered stabbing a guy. I've never actually stabbed a guy. Yeah. You go, Dustin. Aside from that, you're a cock. But that was really doing something. I do. I want to say, hey, man, here's the one thing. Persevere is three quarters of it. Just hang in. Don't go to jail. Don't OD and die. Just be around when somebody goes, you know what I need? I need Screech, because they will. Somebody's going to say that one day, because if they woke, they grew up on that show, it'll be funny for some. And then if you're good, but here's why I don't give that speech to Screech. I'll be wrong. He'll do the 2 weeks work for where it was that somebody thought Screech would be funny, but Screech isn't anything. There's no reason for him to persevere. He's not going to work. He's not clever. He's not going to write a script or just be right for some other part. He is what he is, and it's not much.
But you seem to attach that maybe I don't think he attaches. There is a humility in you that I don't think you put out publicly, but I know it has to be there when you wake up where you go, I'm a blue collar Hollywood worker. Like that's the way I look at it.
I think that always.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Where does that?
I did the other day. We were in New York just the other day doing the Dr. Oz show, and it was on addiction. But it was couched with ex-child stars who have had. That's how I started this comeback. I did Oprah 28 years ago with Todd Bridges and Dana Plato and
really?
Eddie Munch. Yeah, it looked like the whole couch looked like a bad Love Boat special. Every has-been you ever saw was talking to Oprah, and here's what happened. They all cried and moaned that show business ruined their life. I told Oprah, it's awesome. If I weren't Danny Partridge, you wouldn't invite me to town, giving me a first-class hotel room. Plus, they sell stereos in the gift shop, and I'm signing your name. And everybody laughed, including Oprah. And when I got back to the hotel, five other talk shows had called. That's how I started. So doing the same show I just did. The point there being is I can say no to anything now. Radio's the gig.
Yeah.
I can say no to anything I want now. And I wanted to do that. I want to be back on TV and telling funny stories and making Dr. Oz like me, which he did, which was cool.
Yeah. What are the other things you'd like to do? Like, aren't you friends with J.D. Roth?
Yeah, I am friends with J.D.
J.D. Roth, for those of you that don't know, can you describe J.D.?
J.D. Roth.
I've worked with him before.
He and I were mistaken for each other a bunch back when I was young and healthy. That would not happen now. As a matter of fact, he was going to Disneyland. He was going through parking. This is 25 years or 20 years ago, whatever it was. And he's about to pay for parking. And the lady says, oh, you can go in. I loved you on the Partridge Family. And he thought, am I offended enough to insist that I pay? Or do I want to save my money enough to go, yes, I'm Danny Bonaducci? And he chose the latter and went on in free of charge. So he's a guy, fresh-faced, even though he must be in his 40s now, too. Fresh-faced, energetic young man. I don't know about now. I know he's still busy. Toast of the town in reality shows in 2001 through 2010.
Yeah.
Toast of the town.
He was a child star, right?
Yeah, he did. I forget what it was offhand. Do you remember what he did, sweetheart? No, he did something.
Like something.
Double Dare?
Double Dare. I think Double Dare. And he produced a show I did with Amy Schumer and Theo Vaughn and a bunch of comics called Reality Bites Back. I want to say that was happening right when Breaking Bonaducci was happening, because I heard them talking about it, and we were like, oh, it was such a great fucking show.
Dude, they were terrified. They looked, you know how you looked on Bert the Conqueror when you're going down a ride that's just a little too fast? That's what they looked like all the time.
Oh, now did you have complete creative control over control over that? So how would production work? Would you come up with the storyline? Would you come up with the
Yes and no. Here's what happened, honest to God, because it's very odd in the world of shows. Because I have, it's something I said to Dr. Oz literally last week. He said, but you like the fact that you came from television. I said, I'm in the same business as Gregory Peck. I'm flattered to be here. You know, I said, I'm in radio and I'm in the same business as Edward R. Murrow. It's an honor. You know,
a great way to look at that.
It is, too. So as for the storyline, I had a wife, nice enough girl, and we're going to do this reality show. And I've been everywhere and done everything in the world of weirdness. And, you know, I've done The Tonight Show 20 times or whatever it was, and I've been good. I said the right thing every time.
Yeah.
And so I see her, and she's got a pencil and paper. And she's writing stuff down. I go, what the hell are you doing? She goes, well, I'm writing down things for me to do on the show. I said, did you notice there's a word reality in there? You can't write reality. She goes, well, I just don't. I should be doing something when the cameras come. And I said, well, if you want. And I almost wanted to fire her, but I kind of couldn't. So anyway, I'm sitting there in my living room of this ridiculous mansion I owned at the time. And they walk in, and they're all there, and it's first day, and they set everything down, and we're talking while they set up. And then they're finished setting up, and this happens. And I got nothing. They're not asking me questions so I can be clever. They're not Jay Leno. I'm not going to go, ha, 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 funny thing. They're just rolling tight. So I threw everybody out. I forget what I said. I immediately got drunk. And I said, I'd come back tomorrow. And when they came back tomorrow, I was out of my mind drunk, stayed that way, and that's what they filmed.
Yeah.
And I, you know, by the way, I've never seen one episode of it, not one.
Really?
No, it was time to go publicize it, and I thought, I need to sober up. And I said, oh, man, if I'm so ashamed of the stuff I can remember, what do you think I'm going to feel about the stuff I can't remember? So I never, ever, ever watched it.
Oh, so good. You watch those shows, especially when you live in L.A., and all you go is like, hey, wait, where's that house? Is that over by Fountain? Like,
that particular one's on the very end of Vermont. It's the next house to the Greek Theater.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, okay. That was a great
house.
Yeah, it was a great house. When did you start taking care of your body and, like, working out? Were you always like that, or was there...
No, I was actually... The fittest I ever was then.
You were... yoked in that show.
No, I'm that guy where you look over at the gym and you see the bottle of Gatorade and you go, do you think that's vodka? Yes. They say you can't possibly work out drunk. I was never sober in the gym, not once.
I love working out with a buzz.
Yeah, you gotta. Otherwise, there's workings right in the title.
Yes. One of my favorite things to do is when I'm on the road is we get done, we have dinner, and then I grab a beer or a bottle of wine and get it on the treadmill and just walk at a four.
No, absolutely.
And just have wine, watch TV. I had one of the older black lady came into the gym and stood on the treadmill next to me. She said, I've never thought of doing that. And I was like, am I about to get in trouble? And she's like, no, I'm going to do that when I get home.
I'm about to go get some wine.
Yeah, and having a buzz. And the best is when, like, in college when you were really, like, all your testosterone's flowing and you get done the bars and you're like, I'm going to jog home. And I've done that a number of times.
You got to be fairly drunk to think walking home is a good idea, but often, I don't know why that occurs to you. Oh, yeah, I'm going to walk home from here. What do you mean it's through East LA? Of course I'm going to walk there.
Now, how do you do your morning show? Your morning show right now is just straight talk radio, right?
No, we play at least a song an hour, if not two.
Okay.
But, you know, they're rock and roll songs, so they're 3.5 minutes. So most, it's just a talk show. They're kind of the bumper. Yeah. But aside from that, it's pure talk. In what sense? How do I do it?
Now, do you talk about politics? I know you've got some pretty. You've never been not vocal.
No, it's not my thing. I'm not. You know what? I'll tell you. I am not talented enough to not talk about things on my mind. Can you imagine that buffer? What else are you going to talk to if it's not the important stuff? Well, I'm so clever, I'll talk about the not important stuff and make it seem clever.
Yeah.
No, I talk about whatever on my mind. But the radio show. It's not my job to make anybody think about anything. It's not my job to tell you who to vote for. And I mostly resent celebrities and people like that who think they can tell me who to vote for. So we don't do any, like, real games. Maybe one or two if we think of one. But mostly it's here's what's in the news, but not a hard thing. Not a here's what's in the news. This is why you should not vote for this guy. And here's somebody was in a parking lot, and their kid was crying. She gave him a little swat on the butt. And they called the police, and they took her kid for about 6 or 7 hours. What's the world coming to? You should be able to swat your own kid. There you go. That's a topic. Should you be able to swat your own kid? What's the worst you were ever punished? What's the worst you ever punished your kid? 19 phone calls later, we're on to the next bit. That's all my radio show is, and it's a hit, and it's really fun.
I could do that.
You could.
I get wrapped up in I don't get wrapped up in politics at all, but I get a fire in me when I hear about these social justice warriors that are out there. Like the kids at Harvard that made them change the name.
Oh, I hate that. I hate that. I'm not a big fan of. And I don't care enough about anything to get involved in case unless I decide. Well, that's irking me enough. I saw an episode. This is where I'm going to get my politics. I saw an episode of a cartoon. You ever see Family? No, American Dad.
American Dad. Yeah.
There's an episode about he wants people to say Merry Christmas, not Happy Holidays. And I think. That's a topic. Yeah. We got great topic. People were as long as you don't catch them, they're telling them what to do. You're what's right about that? And everybody called me. You should be able to say either one. You should say this. You should do that. People were happy to talk about. But that's just, I want people to be happy at the end of my show. I don't want them. I'd like them to improve, but who the hell am I? I just want them to be entertained.
Yeah. Do you keep in touch with anyone that you worked with on the Partridge Family?
Not enough that you would say, oh, we're pals. But we just saw Shirley Jones. We did my
Shirley Jones.
Yes.
Shirley Jones, hold the fucking phone.
Look at your epiphany. Is she dead? What?
Nope, she's not. She lives by me.
Where?
In L.A. Is that possible?
Yeah.
In Valley Village?
I don't know. She sold her house in Beverly Hills, and I don't know.
Her granddaughter goes to, I may be wrong on this, her granddaughter goes to school with my daughter.
You're kidding.
And they're in a play together right now.
How old is her daughter?
11.
At what? And that's in Valley Village?
Yeah, like in Valley Village area.
Didn't you teach school near there for a while?
Yeah, and I think Shirley Jones lives in Encino.
Yeah.
So it is near there.
Yeah. Where did you teach school?
I taught in West LA and Bel Air.
For those of you listening at home, that's my wife, Amy. Back to Amy.
Hi.
So wait, Amy, hold on. Let me ask you a question.
Okay.
So where did you meet Danny?
Starbucks.
Starbucks. Did you know who he was immediately?
Yes, I did.
Okay. And so had you had a crush on him before when you had seen him?
I wouldn't say a crush, but I read his book and I went to his book signing. I was 19 years old. We didn't know each other. It's the only book signing I've ever been to.
Really?
And a picture exists too from that my mom has. I don't have it.
Really?
Yep.
And so you knew what you were getting into when you met him?
Oh, no, of course not. No.
It's real. It's like conversations I do this stuff.
What were the first red flags that showed up? Where you're like, I'm not telling friends about this one.
Well, I remember telling my mom that I was dating somebody that I was serious about, and she says, "Oh, that's great. What does he look like?" And I said, "Do you know who Danny Bonaducci is?" And she said, "Yeah." And I said, "Well, he looks exactly like that. In fact, that's who it is." And it was just like silence.
Really?
By the way, her mother is my age. Back to you.
Oh, really? So your mom knew exactly who Danny about it. She grew up on Danny.
Yeah, and luckily she had an open mind about it because she, I don't think, was happy about it, you know?
Shut up.
This was just like right on the heels of Breaking Bonaducci, just right after that aired. Yeah.
I'm sweating.
He was still living in a house with his ex-wife.
Oh, shut up. Yeah. What? Get out. So then, what happened next?
My mom was in town. We all went to dinner, and he was super, you know, has really good manners and was polite. And he's the first guy. He's the only guy I've ever brought home. So, I mean, so they gave him a shot, and everyone likes him. So it worked out just fine, surprisingly.
That's so crazy. That's so crazy to be the same age as your girlfriend's mom.
She's a tad older than me, but I'm actually older than my father-in-law.
Really?
Yeah, he's 6'6" tall and younger than me. And I've told him, I'm drunk, I'm short, and I'm mad about it. But couldn't be a sweeter guy. And that's a very true story. Yeah, because, you know, I'm walking into this very nice neighborhood, upper middle class neighborhood with a swimming pool and, you know, a gated community, with her mom, the professor, the ex-professor, and her two sisters, so three girls. I know they're going to know who I am. And the last thing I did have noticed, Breaking Bonaducci, and everybody knows when I've been busted, because even though it was in the 80s and 91, they're pretty big. You smack one transvestite, people are going to hear about it, Bert. So I know they're going to hate me, but I'm not going to be the cause of it. And yeah. I walked in the door and couldn't have given a more fair shot to me. And now there are other sons-in-laws. There weren't at the time. But if I had to bet money, I'd go, I'm the favorite. She loves me most. Yeah. You know, but she does. I don't really mean must, but she loves me. Kathy loves me a lot, thinks I'm great. I take care of her daughter. There's first and foremost. I don't cheat on her. I don't lie to her. I don't hit anybody else anymore.
Yeah.
You know, I settled down. I paid my dues. I did my life. And now I do this. And this is actually, by the way, way more pleasurable. I didn't know.
You've got the gig, man. Well, I love the you hit one transvestite.
Yeah, you're going to hear about it.
What was that story?
That's yet time.
Yes.
It's a great story.
Yes, I have time.
When people ask me to do comedy, I don't do it because it's too scary for me. I can't pile. Tell you, I don't know how to do it.
You're great at it.
I've done it. I've made real dough at it, but I've done it a handful of times. It's just so scary because I don't tell jokes. I tell the story. I tell stuff that happened to me.
You'll see what I do.
So, that's what I figured with you.
Just tell stories.
So, all right. So here's the story, really. You want the full version of it? 100%. All right. So I could actually walk around. I'm better on my feet like the Sundance Kid. I married some girl, literally on a first date, in the middle of a first date, I married this lady. And the short version of that is I'm making out, she's a grown woman, she's like 25, making out with her, sliding into second, and finally she goes, oh no, I'm sorry, I can't do that. I probably should have told you, I'm a Christian, and I can't do that till I'm married. Well, fuck, all right. Yeah. And so I called a minister and married her right there in the living room. So it's only been a few days, so some people would say I plan to cheat on my wife. I would say I met this girl 72 hours ago. I don't, there's weird rules. So I'm going, but anyway, I'm not doing anything. In my heart of hearts, I'm not doing anything. I'm going to the store, it's about 2 in the morning, and I'm going to 7-Eleven. I'm going to get cigarettes. As a matter of fact, I'm 820 feet from my house. I know that because the cops measured it later because the story goes bad. So I'm pulling into 7-Eleven, and there she is. There's a hooker right there, long, straight, black hair, 2 o'clock in the morning, working. You know, she's obviously working on the corner. I pull over. I roll down my window for the do-you-want-a-date conversation, which does not happen. Yeah. She just hops into my car and says, want a date? Close the door, and we go forward. And then I went, hey, wait a second. And I've traveled 25 feet tops. And I turn, and it's a guy.
Yeah.
I've been raised in Hollywood. I've been drunk in Hollywood for the last 10 years. I don't give a shit that transvestite. Everybody's a transvestite.
Yeah.
I said, hey, man, my mistake. Just hop on out. And he said, no. You owe me $40. He wasn't sober either. And I said, I said, no, man, serious biz, get out of my goddamn car. And he goes, no, you owe me $40. You took me off my corner. Give me my $40. I'm like, shit. And I get out of the car and I walk around the car and I open his side of the car because now we're dating. And I open his door. And I grab him out of the car and I stand him up and up. And he's big. He's big. He's over two. He's like, what did Court say? Because they measured him too. 220 pounds in heels, which can hurt. So I don't even think anymore. It's a big man in heels who sells himself for a living. This is bad. He could have a gun. Fuck him. Boom. Down. He goes down. He starts to get up. I go, don't get up. And he's like looking at me and he's reaching up with his hands. So I hit him again. And I don't really remember exactly how it goes here, but he starts kind of screaming, and I kind of started screaming. Oh, I know what I'm doing. I'm screaming this. You'll love this. I'm yelling, stay down. I'm little, and I can't be nice to you. I'm too little to be nice. That's what I'm yelling at this guy. So apparently, neighbors heard yelling. Yeah. They think they heard screaming in the story in the court and called the police, but they think they heard him screaming because he got hurt.
Yeah.
I'm screaming, I'm little, stay down.
Yeah.
So finally, I hit him, and he stays there. He falls down by the wheel. And I look, and I'm at a park. There's a park, and on the other side of the park, I see flashlights. Here come the cops.
Yeah.
And I think, you know what? I can explain this. It's weird, but I can explain it. You know, I'll just tell them exactly what I just told you.
Yeah.
Nothing's happened. No money actually even changed hands yet. And I think, you know what? The tabloids are going to kill me. Danny Partridge with the transvestite hooker. I got to go. And going was the mistake. I thought, up until that, it was a fist fight that I won.
Yeah.
One eye left. Reckless endangerment. And by the way, did I mention I was on probation in another state? Oh, yeah. That, too. So I split, and here's my thing, and I say this on stage when I tell the story. I say, I've had lots of weird moments in my life, but this is my favorite. I listened to the high-speed pursuit that I was in on the stereo of the car I was driving.
Wait. How is that possible?
There's a helicopter. Boom. This kind of stuff doesn't happen in Phoenix enough. I was all the news all the time. And the funny thing is they're going, he's heading to this corner. Oh, he's going to take this right turn. He won't make this. And I'm going, fuck you. I've got this. And I did. I beat them home. I took off all my clothes. I thought, I'll just say I've been in bed all night. And unfortunately, it was the night, I believe the night after, soon after Rodney King. And I get in bed all naked and say, I'm going to be here all night. And I hear him kick the door and not kidding around because they saw me come in. There's no missing it. And I got scared and I jumped in my closet and I pulled up all these clothes over my head. And there's like 8 cops in my room. And this one cop comes over and he sticks a billy club into this pile of clothes, which I'm, and it's missing me by like an inch. And they start to split. I, oh my God, I'm going to get away with this. And I don't know what happened. They moved the clothes and you saw some of my red hair sticking out. They just came back and just beat the shit out of me. But the reason, no hard feelings either. They still thought it was a girl. So as far as I'm concerned, they're concerned. I'm some guy that beat up some chick bad. He was hurt.
Yeah.
So yeah, I was kind of a drag.
Shut the fuck up.
And then I'm in court. And this is my favorite part. So I'm in court, and this is getting really weird because the guy says, "Do you know the maximum penalty for reckless endangerment while you're on probation in another state?" And I said, "No." And he goes, "Life." And I went, "What?" And he goes, "Oh, we'll never get you life, but I'll get you 10 years. Just like that. I'm going, what's happening here?
Yeah.
This is over a fight? What's happening? It's not over the fight. It's over the leaving. Plus, it was so much press. And all they got is a transvestite hooker. They thought they had to. They kicked the shit out of me. I'm real hurt. And I'm all over the news with cuts and stitches. And they got nothing.
Yeah.
So they said, plead to this. So I'm in court. And the judge says, "Mr. Bonaducci, let me tell you what I think happened. One of the things was you went out and rented a prostitute, and when that prostitute turned out to be a man, you got angry and you assaulted him." And I went, "You're absolutely right, Your Honor, and I would like to press charges for consumer fraud." Not a laugh.
Not a
chuckle. And so I ended up getting 5 years probation on that one, tacked onto something else I'd done. I ended up doing 7 years of probation.
Really?
Yeah. In three different states by the time I was done.
Have you ever had to do time in jail?
Nope. Done the night when they arrest you.
Yeah.
But no.
Now, at this point, your dad's still alive?
Yes, I believe my dad was alive for all this.
When did you stop talking to him?
Years and years and years. Teenager, 21 maybe at the oldest.
Oh, really?
When I stopped talking to him, yeah. He was not a nice guy. Nobody loved being around him. And I think nobody would ever spoken to him again, but like Christmas Day, 1980, whatever, he had a stroke. And people felt obligated, but I was living in another state doing radio. I was making my comeback, if you will. So I didn't feel like I was forced to be nice to a guy I never liked just because he had a stroke.
Yeah. How did radio come about?
Exactly the way I told you. So I was happening fast and forward, but I was doing the radio tour of people who went to talk to ex-child stars who took a bunch of drugs. And I went in, and they asked me to stay for a few days. And I went in there, and the boss just said to me, I couldn't believe it.
Is this in Philadelphia?
This is in Philadelphia. I'm staying in my mother's goddamn basement. I'm 30 years old, and I'm homeless again. It's not the first time. I'm down. I'm living outdoors.
30.
Yeah. Yeah.
So funny.
28, maybe.
Holy shit. I thought you – so when did you stop working as a child star? Like, when did you feel
like Partridge Family wrapped up in 74. And I only did a few weeks' work after the Partridge Family. We did the Partridge Family and Space cartoons. For, you know, we did that kind of work, but I didn't work much after 1975. Chips was very good with me. I did three episodes of Chips, which kept me like, we still, Amy does the books, and when she thinks I'll be interested, she'll go, "Ha ha, Chips just paid you $32, because that's one we can count on."
Yeah.
So I stopped really working in 1975.
And you were, what, 12?
15.
15? And then you have your run-ins, your dust-ups, and then at 30... You come back.
30, I don't think I was in trouble. I just think I didn't have a dime to spare. I couldn't make it. And, you know, you can only mooch so much off your family. Cause nobody in my family is doing well enough to support another guy's whole life. I just need another $300, that's one thing. I need breakfast, lunch, and dinner and some shelter. So I went to my mom's house, and I'm in a mall. King of Prussia Mall, never forget it.
I know King of Prussia very well. I was born in Tampa, or in Clearwater, or St. Petersburg, I think, and then we moved up to King of Prussia and stayed in King of Prussia housing complex.
Oh, okay.
And yeah, my whole family's from Philadelphia.
So I'm going up an escalator, and there's a guy going down the escalator. We meet at just about midsection. He goes, "Hey, aren't you the guy from the Partridge Show?" And I said, "Yes, I am." And I don't have a home. I'm in my mother's basement, but still I got to give, you know, I mean, got to be nice to me. I can't go, "No, I'm homeless. I don't have to be nice to you anymore." And he goes, wait, right there. As he's going down, he runs down, runs back up. He goes, I think he was Woody from the Welch and Woody show. Said, "Please come by my radio show. We do mornings right down the street. It's right down the street from my mom's." I said, "Yeah, okay, I'll do it." And I was kind of nervous. Like, what are you talking about? I hadn't done like that many interviews and stuff since the
party. But you have this wealth of stories that you've gone through.
I didn't really at the time. I didn't think I'd. It turned out I did, yeah. So anyway, I go and I do it. And they say, "Oh, yeah, will you guest week? We'll give you $500. I say, yeah. Friday comes by. And $500, man, do you know the trouble, the havoc I could do with $500?
Yeah.
So I stay, but I don't really do the havoc because I'm getting up at 4 in the morning. I'm tired. The havoc will have to wait. And so on Friday comes by, Dave Knoll, the general manager, meets me outside their door. And it was weird the very first day I did it, because there's the studio, everything's black, nothing. There's only me and those guys. Yeah. And when you open the door at 10, it's become an office building full of people. And it shocked me at first. So Friday comes around, Dave Noel comes up, he goes, you know what? You were meant to, you're great, you're a natural storyteller. And I said, well, thanks, man. He goes, we'd like you to stay. We'd like to offer you a show. And I said, oh, well, that's interesting. He goes, now listen, don't take offense. And a lot of times people in radio versus TV don't know what is what. And he says to me with a straight face, I don't want to offend you, but the budget has about $75,000 in it, and I really don't have a lot of wiggle room. Would you consider that? And I said, yeah, I would consider that. And I walk away. I'm going, I've never seen $75,000. And the partner's family, I made $400 a week, and I only made that 26 weeks a year. Yeah.
Are you serious?
At the end of the show, I made $600 a week.
Shut up.
Yeah, $600 a week. No residuals, no royalties from the albums, nothing. I had when I turned 18, I had $72,000 in the bank. I spent it in the afternoon and started roughing it from that day. So he said, I'll give you the 72. I stayed, and the morning show actually got blown out, and they fired the morning show and said, will you stay? And I said, yeah. And they said, we're going to hire a new morning show. And you were talking about zoos earlier.
Yeah.
I became a member of John Lander and the Nut Hut, and I was a nut in John Lander's Nut. They actually, not only did they have a snare drum for any time you were kind of funny, ba-dum-bump,
yeah.
but it was a real drum with a guy in this little tiny room. Like, can't we put this on tape? Do we have this poor Elliot guy? Do ba-dum-bump? By the way, you might have met him, Elliot Siegel in Washington, D.C., number one guy there.
One of my best friends.
He was the wacky drummer.
Are you fucking
ba-dum-bump-bump-bum. That was his job.
Are you
greatest producer I ever saw?
Kidding me? You know? Oh my God!
Greatest producer I ever saw. By the way, also a black belt.
Is he?
Yep.
I didn't know that.
He went. I'll tell you a story real quick. He's a wacky DJ. This is actually the wacky sidekick. I'm John Lander and the Nutter, but he's a great producer. He's the nuts bolts of the show. So we're out doing some bar appearance, and I'm kind of backing him, if you will. I think it was his appearance, but either way, you're doing wacky bar appearance gigs, and he goes, you know, and here's a t-shirt for the first guy up here with a condom. First guy with a condom, come on up here. And people come running up for a t-shirt. People do anything for a t-shirt.
Yeah.
And he grabs one, and he says, he's looking right at the guy in the face, and he says this with a big smile on his face, ho-ho, extra small for the Chinaman, no surprise there. And I went, what? And the guy actually walks away, the Korean dude, it turns out later, walks away, and I think it hits him. Like in about five steps, that just happened to his face.
Yeah.
Elliot, so I have to pull this guy off, Elliot. Hey, out of your mind. He was holding a glass at Elliot's neck, but he had failed to break it. So he's just holding an actual a tumbler.
Oh, shut up.
Yeah. Best producer I ever saw. I never saw anything like it since. Because now everybody it's all digital. Elliot, this guy would do prank phone calls, this John Lander guy.
Yeah.
He'd do them for 3 fucking hours to get 3-4 minutes. Elliot would take a razor blade and tape. That's how they did it. Razor blade and tape. And he'd do it all night, and there'd be a stack of reel-to-reel tape to get 3 minutes. And Elliot did it every show.
Shut up.
That guy's my hero.
Elliot is one of my best friends.
That's amazing.
I love him.
I knew you'd know him.
He came in. He's the biggest show in probably on the East Coast right now.
Still in D.C., right?
In D.C., yeah. In D.C., in that market, you do a show, and you just sell out all your shows. Right. And when I first went in, he goes... they're like, hey, Elliot's willing to have you in studio. And I was like, I had no frame of reference. I was like, cool. I go in, I do Elliot, I get drunk. I end up giving my wife's phone number out on air. I end up giving my Facebook login out on air. It's the most epic, chaotic show. And then all my shows sell out for the week. And I get done. And I was like, they tell me they sell out mid-show. Oh, all shows are sold out. I'm like, shut up. And then Elliot at the end goes, you know why I had you in? And I said, no. He goes, you're an ATO. He goes, I was an ATO out at wherever he went to college. I go, shut up. Are you serious? He goes, yeah. So he's like, it was the only time that being an attorney has ever paid off for me. And I still see him. I do a call and sick to work show where I go in, do radio, drink, get done at like 10. And then Elliot and I drive to the club, and they sell out, and I do like an 11 a.m. show.
I have a little more in common than I thought. My very first time on the Oprah Winfrey Show, I said that I thought it was disgraceful that celebrities would wear baseball hats and sunglasses. You pay their rent. They should let you know, it's me. You saw my movies. I love you. And she said, would you do that? And I said, oh, I'm not that famous. You know, people did. They asked me for an autograph, and I most certainly give them. But you know what? I mean, if you ever want to talk to me, I look in the phone number in the camera, and I give out my home phone number. And Oprah Winfrey goes, was that your actual home phone number? And I said, yeah, it was my actual home phone number. She goes, well, what's going to happen? It's going to ring. I said, that's not really going to ring because I'm going to answer it, Oprah. It's an honor and a privilege. And I went home and, people flipped out. My phone wouldn't stop ringing.
Yeah.
And so I unplugged it every now and again, and then I'd answer it, and people would freak out. Is it really? And then it went away.
I was like that. I was like that very early on when I was like, I'll give out my email address. And everyone's like, why? I was like,
If they want to email me, yeah. I'll email them back.
What I do, here's a philosophy I think you may have, because I'm just inventing it at this moment, so you may have it. And that is, I give the audience what they want, even if they don't know they want it yet. Shit they might want in the future, like my phone number.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm happy to do it.
Oh, that's so great.
You know, that's so crazy.
Like
I said, I make a super comfortable living. We'll go within the high-end surgeon or lawyer world. There's a guy that put himself through school for 12 years. Because he meant to, not like you.
No.
But, you know, I don't do that. The least I can do is be completely and totally accessible to anybody who wants anything from me.
That's my fault, though. I have that fault where I'm too accessible. And my wife will say that. You need to turn it off. Like, we went to, I think it was Dave and Buster's with the girls for a birthday party. And some fans recognized me. And they were like, oh, shit, it's the machine. And I was like, what's up, guys? They're like, dude, you got to do a shot with us. And I was like, oh, okay. And so my wife's like, what the fuck are you doing? And in my head, I go, it's just Fireball. It's like, I don't even feel it. And it's that one moment they get to have a shot.
They get to have that.
They get to have a moment with me where, and I'm privileged that they want to do that. And my wife's like, no, you got to turn that shit off.
How long you been married?
11 years.
So that's a good run, man.
Yeah, she's perfect.
Good. And
just literally the right tempo for me in like everything. I've been working on this bit on stage where I say that I don't love her as much as I need her. Like no one like thinks about oxygen and goes, I love oxygen. So good. You just go, oh, I couldn't live without it. And I really couldn't live without it.
You really need to nail that down.
Yeah.
As much as I get exactly what you're trying to say, she's saying, you don't love me.
I go, she loves me. She doesn't need me at all. She doesn't need me at all. She loves me. I fucking need her.
Yeah. No, I agree. And you know what? I think we especially people like us, you know, without my wife caring about me and showing me the right thing, that there's an alternative to the life that I want to lead, that a viable and fun and entertaining. We had a great day today. We went clothes shopping for clothes I can afford, for Christ's sake. Yeah. And then we went to a dinner, which is not only delicious. It was ready. What was it called? What was the name? Maggiano's right down here. It was like $70. I happen to have the money for it. And then I came here to see Bert the Goddamn Conqueror. It's a great, you know, it's a great night. But I never stop. Like this would it be an opening to what was going to happen later, and it just leads to an early grave. Now, yeah. I've learned the pleasure of, hey, you know, seeing Bert and watching the show, wasn't that night nice? Good night, dear. That's so much better than, man, is this going to need stitches? That's so much good night, dear, is better than do I need stitches?
It's so hard to do is to say, and that was good. Good night.
And it is good. Yeah. I'm not missing anything else. It's just that if Amy wasn't here tonight, I would think I'm missing something. I think there's something great. And by the way, nothing that magical is going to happen in Bellevue besides you. You're what they've got.
Well, let's hope.
Yeah, I swear to God, the most interesting thing in Bellevue tonight is you. And that's a fact. And that's a compliment because it's a nice little town. But there aren't that many options besides Bert.
There's a bluegrass festival in the hotel I'm in.
I happen to like bluegrass.
They're fucking everyone. Like, my floor is not a jam floor, but you take the elevator down and you just hear floors. Everyone's jamming.
Oh, you're kidding.
Oh, you get in the elevator and people are tuning their guitars and jamming.
I just started taking guitar lessons.
Really?
Yeah.
That's an interesting thing because I thought to myself, when did you ever have the time to become a black belt?
I had 14 years off, but I started on the part show. There was a guy. He was like the recreational something for the three little kids on the part show, the characters of Chris, Tracy, and Danny. Danny being my actual real name, so that was made it easy. Well, the kids didn't do anything. They'd come in, they'd say one or two lines in the morning, they'd do their 3 hours of mandatory legal schoolwork, and they'd split, and I'd be a lone child. And it turned out he was a karate instructor, and it was his day job. And so he started teaching me karate, and then I started going to a school he recommended because we had off half a year.
Yeah.
I started going there, and I had my first degree black belt probably by the time I was 16 or 17, and I was slow to get it. You know, I'm not, I don't fly. By that time, the Kung Fu movies were really taking hold, and people, you know, especially teenagers, flying around the goddamn room. I never could do any of that. But I think I had my first degree black belt by the time I was 17, and I had a lot of time, too. I had a lot of focus. Chuck Norris was my private coach for a while.
Are you serious?
Yeah, we hooked up this thing because I was way more famous than Chuck Norris when this started. Remember, this started while I was on the party.
Yeah.
So the Teen Beat magazine set up a picture of Chuck Norris teaching Danny Bonaducci karate. And so then Chuck said, oh, man, you can go to my Van Nuys school, which was notorious and famous. Really good guys came out of it. And it's a lifetime membership. So, okay. And then years later, I had nowhere to go. but I could go to Chuck Norris's school. So that's how I stayed with. That's how I found the time.
That's interesting. Do you watch MMA or UFC?
I do. We just started. Amy and I just started watching it together. Joe Rogan, who's surprisingly funny.
Fucking fantastic.
Really good, huh? That surprised me. I expected, because I've had a couple of encounters, not bad, but encounter. I was at some, do you remember, dear, the name of that guy's school across the street from our house? Famous guy. He's now in the movies with, he's in The Expendables.
Oh,
with the big cauliflower ear. One of the first famous guys. Couture.
Yeah, Randy Couture.
Randy Couture. He has a school across the street from our first home together. And so I go in, Rogan's there, and we're talking, and I don't know if his testosterone was going because mine was. I'm in a gym where people look, they're doing things that look like fighting. That's enough for me. And Joe seems to be kind of a god kind of there. Everybody knows him and is dealing with him. So I take a trial class, if you will, and I don't remember what the move was. But this guy has me completely locked up. I get on top of a guy, which I think is weirder than shit anyway. And I get up on top of the guy, and he's got his arms and his legs, and I'm like, he's got me. And then Couture says, well, no, you have to get free. So I'm trying to, there's no way out. But I realize when I lean back, I think I could stand up. So I stand up, and he won't let go. He's around me like a child in a pouch. And he stands up, and I look at Couture, he's looking at me like, what are you going to do now? And I just put my arms out, and I just fall forward right on this guy. And he goes, huh. And doesn't let go. So I stand up again. Do it. So I think I did it one or two more. Were you there?
No, I heard about it.
Okay. I did it one or two more times. And Couture like grabs my ear and goes, listen, princess. That's. And I went, wow, Randy Couture's calling me princess. This is the coolest thing I've ever heard. That was my first hello to Joe Rogan. I think I've had him on a couple of my shows. So nice enough. Couldn't be a nicer guy.
Great guy. He's a great guy. He was one of,
and super funny. Did you expect him to be that funny?
Well, yeah, I knew him as a comic first.
Oh.
I saw him on news radio first.
Right, that's where I knew him.
And then being a comic, he was like, he's always had this, you know, almost like this godfather mentality, not mentality, but like persona with us comics.
Right.
He kind of stood
but that's
up
only because he's more famous than most
no,
comics.
No, but he stood up for us about joke thievery. And a lot of us that were younger were like, thank God there's someone that's willing to put his career on the line for guys he doesn't know. That was like, I think every comic endeared himself to Joe immediately. And then Joe started podcasting, and I started listening to his podcast first, didn't know him, and then he reached out
good?
To me. Oh, his podcast is fucking amazing. His podcast is the, when you look at the maybe if you want to do a podcast, that's one of the ones you have to look at, because what he does is he interviews people that I think he'd say this too, are like millions times smarter than him. So he interviews like scientists.
That's his thing though, right?
He is a sponge for information.
See, I'm going the other way. They're coming after me to do this podcast, and I said, you have to, like, I've got everything I need as a radio guy. You have to give me that. I get it. They thought, and it's flattering, they thought, just Bonaducci, go in there and tell some goddamn stories. I said, that's three shows, tops. Then what?
Listen, you should, if before you think about doing one, you should listen one of Bill Burr's, one of Rogan's, one of Corolla's. Corolla's is more of a production. It's got like a whole group. It's produced. It's definitely a radio show.
Right.
And then Marin's is a fucking great one.
Well, here's the thing. We're at, this was really funny because I was, Amy wants literally nothing to do with show business. Doesn't care for it. Not that she's like, she probably thinks you're the nicest guy in the world. She likes me. She's married to me. It's not like that. But she doesn't want to be on TV. It's funny. We get married. She's 20. I don't know if we were married yet or not. But anyway, she's 25. I'm 50. Right? That's funny to me right then. She's a school teacher. I'm a savage. That's funny to me. So I write up a little reality show for VH1 because I'm red hot with VH1. They love me.
Yeah.
You know, if I fart, they'll broadcast it. All right. And they'll pay me for that. So I write the show basically The Odd Couple. She's going to teach me how to balance a checkbook. And then once I can do that, we'll move on to the next thing, like how to unload and load a dishwasher, you know, how to know when things are dirty, and how to do your laundry. It'll be funny as hell. How to bait traffic road. This will be hysterical. I go to VH1 with it. They go, yep, love it. Can't give, wait to have it. I go home to, and I say, Amy, we got a new reality show. She goes, oh, I don't want to do TV. I said, oh, come on. We've got, it's a lot of money. Change your mind. And she, like, we're early on, and I could still be kind of loud. And she goes, I don't want to be on TV, and I told you that. Because people wanted to take our pictures, and she didn't want to. I thought she was a fucking criminal at first. And I said, what, you really? This is a lot of money. She said, I don't want to do it. And she said, I told you I didn't want to do it. I said, I thought you were lying. You're a young girl in Hollywood. What do you mean you don't want to do TV? And she didn't do it. Last week, this kind of comes off a little braggy. And I'm just not mad at it anymore. I was mad, but I keep my mad different. It was kind of like my feelings were hurt. Yep. But you know that show Marriage Boot Camp?
No.
You go on it, and there's a fake, well, I guess they're a real doctor or whatever, and they analyze you, and there's all these people are screaming. And for example, to give you an idea, you have to take sock puppets and show where your sex life goes wrong. It's and you, if you're good, you'll fight. That's why they want me.
Yeah.
And so the show pays 50 G's. By the time they were, oh, wait, Bert, wait with that face. Whoa. First, my agent says he'll never do it. His wife won't do it. So they said 100. 150 for 2 weeks. For 2 weeks. And then they say, oh, Danny, you have to let Danny leave the house because you have to live in this house with these savages. He has to do a radio show. No, he can't, but we'll build him his own radio station in the house. Okay, ready? 250, a quarter of $1 million for 2 weeks. Now, for not doing it, I have to give her this. Like, everybody in my family liked her more. For a day, I liked her less. Yeah. But I'm proud of her. It's a savage show. It's terrible. You know, marriages are ruined over that kind of stuff. And it's resolve. I said, what do you mean you don't want to do it because it's terrible TV? That's what I do for a living. Yeah. I write terrible TV. She goes, no, you do good radio and you shouldn't do it. So I've now forgiven her. Yeah. But yeah, this had something to do with something. But
is the spot still open? Because me and my wife.
Well, you got to go on and break shit. You got to go on and break shit and smash shit and say I'm leaving you and I've been having sex with that 8-year-old poodle or whatever it is. Yeah, you're supposed
My wife, Travel Channel came to us and at a very preliminary stage and said, we'd like you two to do a show together. Travel around the world. We'll give you coordinates. I shouldn't say the pitch, but they basically do a show where we travel around the world. My wife's like, nah. I go, what the fuck's wrong with you? I go, think about it. We're still young. The girls will be fine. We get to go see the world together. It'll be a blast. And she was like, nah, it's not what I signed up for.
She's right.
Yeah. She goes, I signed up to be a mom to these two children and your wife.
And it's not just that. And God bless her because she's right. And her motives are her own and they're noble. And I like it. As if you need me, my approval. But
thank you.
If you watch carefully, you're welcome. If you watch carefully a travel show, how set up there, you're not really traveling the world and getting experience. You're doing a television show. We're working all the time. You know, the only guy who gets close is Bourdain. And for the first 5 years, he didn't. He just can now do anything he wants, and it's called a television show. Other guys have to do that. You have to meet the chef. You know, you're in a restaurant with actually functioning customers. When I was doing Breaking Bad and we'd go into a restaurant with real people. I felt terrible about that.
Yeah. Oh yeah, you get the meal, and they're like, "Hold on, we're gonna do we're gonna do beauties."
So you wouldn't really be traveling. Your wife's right.
It would be working with my wife, and I don't think she'd like the way I work. She'd probably, as a matter of fact, one of the producers was like, "Are we sure we want to involve your wife, into your road life? Because she may like start pulling back." Like, she was like, "Well, I'm not going out drinking every night." I go, "Babe, if you're in fucking Vietnam for the night, trust me, you're going out drinking.
You're going not only you're drinking, but you're drinking a drink with a snake in it."
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And you're gonna be playing Pai Gow at the end of the night with some fucking
favorite games.
Really?
Great game, Pai Gow.
Nice. What time is it?
You have somewhere to be. Yeah,
I got to do a show. What else?
I'm all sweaty and stuff already. Are you really got to go out and do a show?
Yeah, I know. I'm trying to figure out this hour for Showtime. So I'm like,
you got a Showtime deal?
Yeah,
great. Good for you.
Special, April 1st. So if anyone wants tickets, go to
where are you gonna do it?
Irvine Improv.
Oh, really?
I wanted to do it in a club because that's where I do stand-up. Because
you're a road comic. You got
to
do it.
Like, and I said that to Bill Burr and I were talking about it. And I said, I understand that you do theaters, so it makes sense that you do your special in the theater. But like, I really do still do stand-up in clubs. Like, I don't want to wear something different. Like, it's always found it weird, like, when Attell would come out to a theater in a suit, and you'd be like, what? But Attell doesn't wear suits. He wears a hoodie with a leather jacket and a fucking crumply baseball cap and smokes cigarettes. Do it in a fucking club. So
I dressed up for you. I'm jeans and a t-shirt. I still got the jeans on. I dressed up for you. Thank you, dear.
Yeah, do you now? Are you still working out pretty hard?
Mostly just the treadmill because it's the morning show just eats you out. As a matter of fact, I do the treadmill at 4 a.m. because when you're done and you get home, you swear you'll do it.
Yeah.
But it's just I have a couch much like this, and I have a TV much like that giant screen, flat screen right there. And you know those two should not be separated. Yeah. So before I watch from 4 to 4:30, I watch CNN, and from 4:30 to 5, I watch the local news, and then just run right to work. I have 1 mile from work, 3 minutes away.
Fucking great.
And I live in a great neighborhood. You'd think, oh, you must live in an industrial neighborhood right next to a radio station. I'm on the top of a fucking mountain, and there's stuff going on, and one of them is a radio station at the bottom.
Oh, that's so great.
Yeah, it's great.
What's one thing you want out of life before it ends?
In what sense? Because it would be easy to say peace of mind, which, by the way, would not be as trite as it sounds. I don't get that much of that, or haven't. But
professionally.
Oh, I can tell you.
What?
Again, it's going to sound a little bit shitty. If my wife had three guesses, she'd get it. I want a star on the goddamn Hollywood Walk of Fame. Pieces of shit have a star on the David fucking Cassidy. What's he do?
David fucking Cassidy.
Just this song. They do it on my radio show to bug me because they know I want one. And they'll go, Siegfried and Roy have 17 stars on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. Although one of them had to get bit by a tiger to get that. But still, I would like, because I have everything else. I have every award. I don't have an Emmy, but I don't really want. I never strode. It wasn't a thing.
I don't care about awards, but that would be.
I didn't get one bad review on the book. I hit the bestseller list. Although, here's the thing. I get a call from my agent. You made the New York Times bestseller. Oh, that's awesome. I opened the paper. What do you mean it's not in there? Oh. The bestseller list is 100. They only write the top 10. You're like 87. But still close enough. So I wanted to write a book was a thing for a long time. I wanted to write a book. But that was a commitment, man.
That was the biggest mistake I ever made.
Did you write a book?
It's right over there.
Actually, I know that. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it wasn't the biggest mistake I ever made because my
look at you go though. You write that fucking book. God bless
you. I got done and I thought, I wonder if I'd spent the same amount of energy on stuff I'm really excel at, like doing stand up or doing my podcast as opposed to writing a book. But it was a great experience. I'm glad I did it.
No, you wrote a book forever. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's forever.
I'm impressed all the hell.
Yeah, and so I thought a star on the Walk of Fame would be badass.
Yeah, yeah.
It would be fucking badass.
We actually are again, our first home, and we still own it for some weird reason. We don't own any of the other houses. Yeah, yeah, right on Hollywood Boulevard. The Hollywood Walk of Fame is outside our door.
Really?
Matter of fact, the first stars are right outside
our door. How often do you get down to Hollywood?
We got down for some show not too long ago. What was that?
Twice a year.
A couple times a year.
So what, does it just sit there?
We rent it out. And Amy takes care of that. It's a bit of a headache. But, and it's right. Do you know, I guess, the Hollywood and Highland?
Of course.
Across the street. You look out my front door and you're looking at it.
Are you serious? Yeah. Shut up.
Yeah, wait, I think we're the first residential.
Is it over on Franklin?
No, it's Hollywood Boulevard.
It's on Hollywood?
Yeah.
Holy crap. Yeah, never get rid of that fucking thing.
Well, you say that. I thought the same thing. We bought it for, I think, $8.25. And I said, we'll sell it when it's $1.50. That's when we'll sell it. Yeah. And first the market fell out. We bought it. Like, we just met. We met in 2008. It was not the best time to buy a house. But I was getting a divorce. It was fucked. I needed something that was mine. So the bottom fell out. And then it wasn't worth anything. But it's actually hard to walk around my house. It's such a tourist thing. Grauman's Chinese is right across. There's 1,000 people at the end of my gate every day. And I like being famous. I'm the B-list celebrity, but I dig it. And I'd like to be an A-list celebrity. I'd like my life to be a little harder because I'm so goddamn famous. But I was going to Starbucks one morning, and it's 500 feet from my house, and it took 40 minutes because I'm never going to turn down a picture, an autograph, or anything like
that.
And I got back, and I think, honey, Jesus Christ, this might have been a bad call. The Hollywood tour, I dig this, you'll love it. If you were there and saw this for real, you go, okay, the god of comedy made this happen. I'm walking on the other side of the street from my house. I'd gotten something at the Hollywood Highland, and I'm walking. And as I'm pulling up to this guy, there's a guy talking about five people, and he's saying, and Johnny Carson, you said we'll stop by there first, but before we even needed to go, if you remember the Partridge Family, Danny Bonaducci, who played Danny Partridge, lives right there across the street, and he turns and he points right at me. And he goes, I hope you don't mind as much as you fuck it, invite him over. But that's where I live, man.
Oh, that's fucking great.
Yeah.
Well, Danny, I gotta thank you, man. This is this has been a blast.
It was really fun.
You're someone that I feel like everyone my age definitively has a connection with because we've met you when you were a kid. We've seen your ups and downs, and you've literally been doing nothing but just great work for the past 25 years.
Thank you very much. But for your people your age, definitively, I'll tell you my one and only joke when I do stand up, and then I just tell stories. I walk out on stage, thunderous applause, by the way, and I stand there and I look at them until the applause stops, almost kind of daring them. And I say, I know what you're thinking. That guy looks a lot like Danny Partridge's grandfather if he didn't live well. And I could tell these guys really laughed. They knew the Partridge. These guys kind of laughed. They were wondering if I was on the Partridge. These guys didn't laugh at all. They never heard of the Partridge. Couch your jokes accordingly. That's my one joke that I tell.
One of the best, one of Greg Giraldo, I don't know if you ever heard this joke.
Oh, well, I don't know.
From the roast Kathy Griffin was hosting. And he goes, keep it going for Tranny Bonaducci.
I did totally hear that. We both heard that.
I literally lost it. I was like, and I was thinking about that joke all day today. And I was like, how cool that you are so ingrained in the natural, in the national lexicon that just a switch on your name destroys.
Okay, you, this is why I love you, Bert, because that's the way you looked at it. It's a lovely way to look. Because another way to look at it, somebody else can look at it, is 50 goddamn years of hard work and you're a punchline. I like your way. Catch me when I'm mad. I'll be looking at this goddamn it on a punch. Tranny Bonna fucking Ducci. How dare they? But no, I'm honored to be Tranny Bonna Ducci.
Thank you so much.
It was a pleasure, man. I really enjoyed myself.
Thank you very much.
This episode was brought to you by The Machine.